from the Lord's own radio station, located at the spiritual capital of the universe, Prashanti Nilayam Puttaparthi. I am Arvind from Team Radio Sai, offering my gratitude at the lotus feet of Bhagwan for this beautiful opportunity to welcome all our listeners for yet another segment of Afternoon Satsang. And as always, along with me is Brother Prem, from Team Radio Sai. And I take this opportunity to welcome him, Sai Ram Prem.
Sai Ram Arvind.
Yes, dear listeners, a lot has happened in the past week. We had the recently concluded Aradhana Mahotsavam, which concluded yesterday after a three-day homam and yagnam which took place. It was grand. It was very uplifting. It was very elevating. And more than once, we could feel Swami's presence during the festivities and the celebrations and on the auspicious day itself. But before we delve into that and the afternoon satsang that comes ahead, here's something interesting that we would like you to listen to.
That was a special one indeed. Dear listeners, if you just heard that clip, that is from our latest Sai Blossom product and also the latest offering on our Radio Sai website, that is the Radio Sai ringtones.
Yes, you know, these ringtones this time have been specially made from an instrumental album. Prem, for long, we have been inundated with requests for instrumental bhajans.
Right.
Because, you know, whether you want to travel in a car and play it, or play it like a background music going on as you go about your work at home or in office, there is something soothing about instrumental bhajans.
And so, the other thing, of course, is the instrumental bhajans, I think, always reminds us of that beautiful time when we used to sit and wait for Swami. And, you know, the instrumental bhajans which used to come floating by is the announcement of Swami about to come in our midst.
Exactly. So, just listening to these bhajans without having to concentrate on the words and the meaning, just listen, because this is pure musical beauty at its best. It brings in so many memories and feelings, divinity on the whole, in every perspective, in every angle. And therefore, the first in a series of instrumental bhajans that we plan to release has been an instrumental bhajan album on the flute. There is so much that one can speak about the beauty of the flute. How Swami has often said in his discourses that one should be like a flute, right, hollow, without any ego or feeling of self. And that is seen, it is heard, even in each of these bhajan that have been played. And so, dear listeners, here with great joy, we would like to announce the arrival of the first ever Sai Blossom product based on instrumental bhajans. But that's not all. Along with that, we have had several other firsts for this Aradhana Mahotsavam. We have one CD which is based on the daily prayers. Right. You know, like Brahmarpanam, the night prayer, Prarthana. And it has been sung by the students. It has been tuned by the students. And listening to it, I feel, you know, when I heard it, I just felt that you don't need any more incentive to pray. If this is how the prayer is going to be, I would love to be a part of it. It's so uplifting, soul-stirring.
And I'm sure each one of these prayers have a special story behind them.
Correct.
And of course, we don't know all of them, but some of them... Do you know that Brahmarpanam, when it first started in the hostels, mm-hmm, in Swami's hostels, mm-hmm, after Brahmarpanam, they used to chant that Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva. And then they used to chant Asatoma Sadgamaya, then they used to chant Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu three times, and then Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Oh my God.
And then Swami said that, you know, by the time you finish all this, your food becomes cold. So stop with Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva and Shanti Shanti.
Hey, that is very kind of Swami, because sometimes, you know, when I sit at the dining table to eat, even chanting Brahmarpanam, especially if the food is very tasty and the aroma is wafting into your nostrils, it becomes so tough, you want to chant Brahmarpanam before having the food. So it is very sweet and nice of Swami to have shortened it.
Right.
But one thing, Prem, I must say that if you listen to the Brahmarpanam as it is presented on this CD of daily prayers, I wouldn't mind waiting for it to complete. It is so beautiful, so melodious. It fills the heart before you can go ahead and fill your stomach, actually. So uplifting.
And you know, same thing can be said even about the Karacharan Kritamba, which is
night prayer.
The night prayer. In fact, even that has a beautiful story. It seems when the erstwhile Arts and Science College in Vrindavan was there, Swami sent word to the warden saying that I want a prayer which can fit into the night prayer section. Something which the boys can chant before going to sleep. And it seems it was one of the students who selected this verse.
Oh, okay.
And offered it to Swami and said, Swami, this could be nice as a night prayer. And Swami approved of it.
Well, dear listeners, now that Prem has said about it, we shall try before we end the satsang, if it is possible to play this recording as we have made it in the studios. It's, as we said before, soul-stirring, uplifting, inspirational, beautiful, melodious, all the words, all the adjectives that we can possibly use. And along with this comes, if I may say so, one of the most coveted, most wanted, most liked, most sought after, the Nada Brahmam series.
Right.
And it's a double delight this time. Usually we come out with one Nada Brahmam at a time, but this time Nada Brahmam 5, Nada Brahmam 6, both have been brought out surely due to the great popular demand, you know, for Nada Brahmam bhajans. You know, Prem, recently I had a chance to go out of the country, visit some of the other countries.
Right.
And everywhere, Nada Brahmam seems to have caught on like wildfire.
Okay.
For example, in some places, when I spoke to the people, they had no idea about what Sai Blossom is.
Mm-hmm.
But Nada Brahmam, they knew. And you know what one lady said? She said, we love Nada Brahmam because it is life-changing.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, when I heard it, I cannot make out what is so life-changing about Nada Brahmam, but apparently it has been making its waves around the world. So dear listeners, Nada Brahmam 5 and Nada Brahmam 6, both are out. Grab your copy soon. Don't worry, they will never run out because we have a constant supply stream providing us.
Okay, Arvind, having said all that, let's come back to the discussion which I'm sure a lot of our listeners will be waiting for us to resume, which is what we've been talking about, Swami's biography, Swami's sweet story, Satyam Shivam Sundaram. And we had promised the last time when we spoke about this topic that we will travel to Kamalapuram with Swami. And
yes,
that is precisely the juncture where we are at right now.
Yes, Prem, we will definitely travel with Swami to Kamalapuram. But before we travel, please forgive me. You know, there was one thought process that went on for the last few days. And I'm sorry for springing this as a surprise even on you.
Mm-hmm.
But let me share it with you.
Okay.
And when I share, I will need your cooperation because it's going to be a set of questions and you have to answer.
Okay.
So answer straight from your heart. Don't worry about anything. Okay. The first question is, have you played video games?
Yes, of course. I think anybody who's been through childhood would have. And it's not stopped with my childhood. Even now, if you give me a video game, I think I'd get hooked.
Okay. So have you played strategy-based video games?
Strategy-based? Yeah.
I mean, like where you have to choose your resources, you have to marshal between them because there's a trade-off.
Right, I guess so.
You have to intelligently choose.
Some of these speeding games, I think you choose where you use the boost,
exactly.
The speed boost and things like that.
Great then.
Mm.
Third question before we go into that. The third question is, do you believe that the way to transform the world is through individual transformation?
Thank God, I thought you were going to ask me, the way to transform the world is through video games.
No. Through individual transformation.
I think so. I mean, I can't prove that to you, but definitely based on whatever we heard from Swami, and there is a kind of gut feeling within that, yes, individual transformation is what is necessary for transforming the world.
Great. And if at all there are any listeners out there wondering how individual transformation is actually the way for world transformation, maybe we can have a satsang on that sometime.
Yeah.
But as of now, we accept the fact that individual transformation is the way to change the world.
Right.
Okay, now that we have agreed on this, now imagine, Prem, that the world today, as we see, this doesn't need imagination, we see it. It's in utter chaos. There's a lot of problem in the world. Now, the way to transform the world today is through individual transformation. That's what we have agreed.
Okay.
Now, suppose you are given this mission, if I may say so, that you have to go out and change the world.
Mm-hmm.
You will be concentrating on changing individuals because individual transformation is the way to world transformation.
Right.
So now this, if I can say, is your video game mission. Mm-hmm. You are going to go out and change the world.
Mm-hmm.
So for this now, there are the resources that I'm offering. First resource is the number of years. How many years do you think you'll pick for changing the world?
Okay. Nothing, all that you can give me.
Okay, so take an arbitrary number. Say, how many? 100 years, 200 years, 300 years? How many years do you think you will need?
Let's say 100.
Okay, suppose 100 years. So, now, you know, you're choosing your life on earth. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Let's say we are in the heavens, looking down on earth, seeing how horrible it's in it. Mm-hmm. And now you're picking things so that you can go and accomplish your mission in this game.
Right.
So, you have picked 100 years.
Okay.
Okay. Now, which country do you think you will choose to start off your life? Where do you think you would like to take birth in the whole world? Because now you're going.
Yeah, right, I think you'll have to choose a country where other things are taken care of. You can straight plunge into the work. Maybe a country which is has a stable setup.
Okay.
By means of economy and politics,
so
maybe.
Some European country.
Maybe, yeah.
United States.
One of the European or the American.
Okay. What kind of family will you pick?
Yeah, the family which would feed me and, you know, keep me well covered.
So,
you know, you don't lose years in the process of security, right?
Okay.
That security.
No, in the sense, for example, if you're maybe the son of a president or maybe if you are the president.
Right, yeah, some family of influence, right.
Yeah, so you will pick 100 years, be born in some Western industrialized modern country and pick a family that is rich or influential,
right,
so that you can inspire people to change. So with this, you are sure in 100 years you will be able to transform the world.
Guess so.
Through individual transformation.
Right.
I too went through this thought process, Prem, and I too arrived at similar answers, you know. Like, I was thinking maybe I'll be born in the US, maybe I'll be born to somebody who is very popular, somebody whom everybody loves so that people will listen to me when I speak.
Right.
And as I thought all this, I suddenly, you know, what struck me was when Swami decided to come for avatarhood, take up his avatarhood, maybe these were precisely the questions that he faced. Where to be born, when to be born, how to be born. And the choices he made, on the face of it, looked like very wrong or very unintelligent choices.
Right.
He chose to be born in a place, Puttaparthi, which, forget the world map, which was not even on the postal map of India. You know, to deliver the post and telegraph, usually every place in a country are linked. And Puttaparthi did not even figure on the postal map of India.
Right.
And he was born into a family which could not afford 3 square meals a day. We are talking about influence. It was such a poor family. And he chose to be born in backward India. Puttaparthi has been described as a stone's throw from Stone Age.
And to put it in the perspective of the social situation then, he was not even born into an intellectual family like a Brahmin family.
Correct.
He was born into a Kshatriya family. I know many listeners might not be able to relate to it, but it was a very important thing in the situation then.
Exactly.
Pre-independent India.
If you're Brahmin, people automatically respect you, revere you.
You
have started at an advantage.
You inherit authority by birth.
And we are sharing this because Swami came on the earth exactly with the same agenda, if you may say so, that is individual transformation so that the world gets transformed. And he has come with the same thing. He chose less than 100 years, 80 years, and all the disadvantages. On deeper thinking, we realize that Swami knew that decades after he has left his body, centuries after he has left his body, his life will still be discussed. And at that time, you know, people may put off saying, Swami was God, so he did it. We can't. Swami wanted to show that individual transformation is very powerful. And he wanted to show that individual transformation transcends wealth, fame, influence, everything. He showed how by being born in a poor family, in a literally God, if we may say so in quotes, God forsaken place, which God did not forsake actually, in a country that wasn't very wealthy, in such circumstances, he chose to be born, and today he is God. He is worshipped as God in millions of homes. And all this happened through sheer individual effort and transformation. I mean, Swami did not have any need for transformation, but Swami showed how you can lead your life in an ideal manner, so that he did not gather influence, or he did not gather fame by simply waving his hand and doing it off in a divine manner. He could have chosen to be born as the President of the United States. It becomes so much easier to influence the world. People have to listen to you. But no, Swami chose a path where his life will be a message to whole humanity in all times to come, which will prove beyond doubt that if you lead an ideal life, you can accomplish the transformation of the world. And in that perspective, I feel what we are doing today, that is going through Swami's life, going through his history, which is his story, is of great importance and significance, because as he himself said it, his life is his message. And it is by studying his life that we too can hope of making our lives his message.
Very true, Arvind. You know, because the essence lies in what you said. You know, individual transformation is the way to world transformation. If you read the Bhagavad Vaini, there Swami makes a very, very, very profound point. He says the first duty of the avatar, or the first reason why the avatar comes down, is to fulfill those who lived lives filled with love for God.
Okay.
That is the first duty the avatar comes to perform. It is to give joy to those who spend their life loving the Lord. And transformation comes later. And Swami says that is why Krishna declares Paritranaya Sadhunam Vinashaya Chatushkritam. The first is Paritranaya Sadhunam. The first is to fulfill the desires of
protect
the pious.
And uphold the pious.
Right. And that is where, because, you know, as we're going to discuss Kamalapuram and Urukunda to follow, the kind of lives which Swami touched, were, as you said, not of influential people, not of people who were, you know, known in the world then. But still he was touching people who were coming to him. Maybe they were people who deserved that grace, and that is why they were receiving it. It's not maybe, they were people who deserved his grace, and that's why they received it. And all the while, maybe Swami's eyes were on that world transformation.
Because if we see, you know, I might be going a little ahead now, when Swami sang Manasa Bhajare Guru Charanam, saying that you seek succor at the lotus feet of your guru and you will get peace. You know, this was a time when the world was being ravaged by the world wars.
Right.
On one side, the whole world was burning itself with missiles, bombs, bullets, guns, and every country was at war with some country or the other. It was at such a time that Swami, you know, threw away his books. And he said that, my devotees are calling out to me, I can't stay here anymore. It is in this perspective when we see, we realize how he responded to the global call, the global plea. There was suffering and pain everywhere. And he said, enough. I can't sit here studying textbooks. I have to leave. But well, as I said, I was jumping the gun there. Coming back, when Swami completed his primary schooling in Puttaparthi, and he then went to Kamalapuram. The reason why he had to go to Kamalapuram itself is interesting. Swami's brother, Sheshamaraju, wanted to, you know, fix himself in the position of a teacher. So for that, some training required him to go to Kamalapuram. And at that time when his brother left to Kamalapuram, he went and stayed at the place of his in-laws.
In-laws, right.
At that time, Swami's parents, that is the same parents, felt that if this younger brother, the little one, Satyam, also accompanied Sheshamaraju to Kamalapuram, he could benefit from the better education there and maybe become the officer that they dreamed that he would become one day.
And in fact, even in Kamalapuram, Swami says in some discourses that Sheshamaraju was not staying in that house where Swami was put up. Because Sheshamaraju was traveling for that training, the teacher's training, and he used to come and once a week or something. And actually that set the tone for what Swami went through in Kamalapuram.
Oh.
Because here was a boy, a little boy, who happens to be the younger brother of your son-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
And so Swami ended up doing a lot of the hard work in the house.
Mm.
And you can imagine Kamalapuram, it's in the Kadapa district of Andhra Pradesh.
Oh, burning hot.
Very, very hot. And Swami would say that there was a water scarcity.
Mm.
So every day Swami would walk so many miles just to fetch water. And Swami would say that, you know, there used to be a rod, a bamboo pole.
That was the way they used to carry
right,
water.
On
the
either side there would be pots.
Mm.
And Swami would fill water in that. And early morning set out to where the water source was and bring water. And again come back from school in the evening and again repeat the whole thing.
Because water is something that you need.
Right.
And every time that Swami used to carry water back home, he would carry this bamboo pole on his tender shoulders. You know, literally and figuratively, Swami's shoulders were bearing a great responsibility and burden. And very often they would get chapped, they would get sore. But Swami never complained. Bearing the pain, he did it. You know, today when we look back, we feel all that Swami had to do. Today, Swami has provided water to 700 villages and many, many more. Millions of people have benefited by the water that he has supplied. Did he have to carry those pots of water on a daily basis, bruising his shoulder, bruising his arms, to supply water for 5 people? What is supplying water for 5 people when he has supplied water to millions? But again, as we said, you know, we get tears in our eyes when we imagine tender Swami doing it, because when we imagine the Swami we had darshan of, no Swami, we would not allow him to even to lift his own glass of water, because we want to do that. It's an opportunity to do it for him. But you know, the Lord, that feeling that we got is also because the Lord did it that way to us. He did everything as a service to us. And when we see the Lord doing it to us, naturally we feel like doing it to him. And so, right from his childhood, he has lived such an ideal life that he has set an example for us to emulate.
Right, and that is the beautiful thing, you know. And Swami describes the setting of Kamalapuram those days, water scarcity. What Swami did, I think many people, many boys and many children of his age would have been doing at that time.
Mm.
It was not like Swami was undergoing something which was unknown or which was uncommon in that time.
Hmm.
There might have been other children who underwent it, and that's where that choice of, you know, doing what he did was special. Because here was somebody who could choose anything, but he chose to do this. And I think that was where Swami wanted to give that lesson, because I think in our life, most often we don't choose the events which come to us.
Hmm.
But what makes us is how we respond to those events.
Exactly. Swami says, what you meet in life is destiny. How you meet it is self-effort.
Right. And that is what Swami wanted to show us. Swami just had that extra ability to choose. So he chose the adverse situations and he said, this is how you have to face it.
And that's a beautiful point, Prem. See, when Swami has the ability to choose, I mean in the sense, has the ability to write his own destiny, he chose not a rich, he did not choose an affluent or luxurious or a comfortable life. He chose something that was tough, hard and very difficult. I mean, if we were to be gods and we were to choose, would we have chosen that? But that is what I think separates God from man. Selflessness from selfishness.
And actually, I mean, when you say this, what strikes me is, at that time, when Swami was in Kamalapuram, when Swami was in Puttaparthi, Bukkapatnam, Swami was showing us, when you have little, how do you live? You know, how you don't show people that you have little. How you don't show people that your family is, you know, not as...
Always keeping up the family respect. Hmm.
In the later years, when Swami had all the wealth under his command, Swami again showed us how you live. Because he chose to live in the smallest apartment in Prashanthi Nilayam.
Hmm.
He chose to always walk around barefoot when, you know, people could have given him...
golden sandals.
Gold.
Yes.
Right. And Swami always wore the simplest of clothes, and Swami showed us, you know, both ends of the spectrum. That is where Swami was always teaching us, and Swami, I mean, it's... you can repeat it over and over again when Swami said, my life is my message.
The way he lived did not depend on the amount of wealth he had. Exactly as you said, Prem. Even in the poorest of times, the way he lived, in the richest of times, he lived the same way.
Swami would often say that same Sankati which he had
in
Kamalapuram, and Swami says that Ambali, they used to call that.
Made from ragi.
Ragi malt. And that too, the one of the previous day, that which is soaked in water overnight, that is what Swami used to have early in the morning and leave for school. And almost till the end, Swami kept eating only that ragi sankati.
Correct. When he could have had dishes fit for a king. I remember, Prem, one or two occasions when I got that rare privilege and chance to see Swami eat not dozens, you know, as a exaggeration, I just said thousands of, but, you know, dozens of dishes made from the richest of kind of nutrients and with lot of oil, with lot of different things, you know, the best everybody would cook and get it. Swami would barely even touch many of them, you know. He would bless them all just with his sight and then distribute it among everyone else to partake as prasadam. His consumption remained the same frugal, and we could see it from his size and, you know, never, as Swami used to say, for a long time, almost ever since he crossed his teenage years, his weight has been a constant 108 pounds. It has neither gone up nor down. It has always been at that.
And that is one of the reasons why Swami never used to be liked to be photographed while eating.
Correct.
Swami used to tell us when he was students, because when Swami's spread is laid, there would be about 25-30 bowls
dishes.
Of food.
Correct.
But what Swami used to eat is hardly anything. And Swami would say, people will think that I'm eating so much.
Really. You know, and this also, in spite of that, there have been photographs taken and Swami has allowed, because if that is the desire, so be it. But very, very true. I mean, just because we think that just because we have this much money or just because we have this much, we are entitled to it because I have the means to enjoy so. But Swami showed that even when I have the means, I have 40 dishes laid out before me in silver plate. Doesn't mean I will gorge on them. I will still continue to take what I need. And that is a powerful message that Swami has been sending to us ever since his childhood. Whatever be the availability, we should take only what we need. Because, as Gandhi said, there is enough in the world for everyone's need, but not enough even for one man's greed.
Absolutely. And, you know, talking of how Swami used to be reminded of that exchange which happened in Kodaikanal, you know, when one of the devotees raised this topic with Swami. He said, Swami, you eat so little, but you do so much. You know, even physically, you're so active. And then, you know, he added a comment saying that maybe, Swami, you draw your energy straight from the Panchabhutas. Okay, and immediately Swami cut him
short. The Panchabhutas meaning the five elements.
The five elements.
Okay.
And Swami sternly gave him a look and he said, no, the five elements draw the energy from me.
Those rare moments when Swami chooses to let us know his reality.
Right.
And he chose many such moments, even in his childhood, to let people know of his reality. And therefore, when he went to Kamalapuram, it is said that his fame preceded him, in the sense that there was some kind of respect and love that people showed to Swami. In fact, it is also said that Kamalapuram, the devotees of Kamalapuram, were among the foremost devotees of Swami, even though he made his announcement of his avatarhood in Uravakonda. So Kamalapuram, even in the later days, seemed to have a very special place in Swami's heart.
Right.
So when Swami went to Kamalapuram, one of the first things about him that got noticed was his singing talent.
Right. And that's what Swami used to say, that when he joined the school, I think it was the headmaster was Kondappa, I think, Swami says.
Okay.
So he called Swami and said, Swami, you should lead the... I mean, not Swami, Satyam.
Satyam.
He said, Satyam, you should lead the morning prayers. So then Swami said, no, what is the prayer? What is the prayer you chant here? So then the principal said, no, you write. Whatever you write, let all the children follow that.
Because Satyam's ability to compose and write had also preceded him.
Right.
Preceded him to Kamalapuram. Everyone knew that Satyam was a genius poet. He was a good singer too. And therefore, in the school assembly, the practice was one person would go up on stage and sing and lead the whole school in the prayer. And position was given to Satyam. And Satyam did it with great elan. He composed what is actually the Telugu version of the national anthem of India.
Right. And, you know, one of the things which Swami used to mention later was the scene of that prayer session after Swami chose not to go to school again.
Okay.
because we are jumping the gun a bit here, but...
But we should mention it.
Definitely, Swami, you'd say that, you know, after Swami left, none of the children wanted to partake in that prayer.
Participate in that.
Okay, and the principal finally found one of the students who had learned that song from Swami, and he kind of implored him to come and lead the prayer. And Swami would say that that boy used to sing the first two lines and then break down. And the whole school used to break down and wouldn't be able to continue. I mean, when you look back now, what better prayer could there, you know, been?
There's one thing ironical here, Prem, but not ironical, I mean paradoxical. You know, in life we have moments when we laugh. In life we have moments when we cry. Later on when we look back at our life, we laugh at the moments when we cried. And we cry remembering the moments when we laughed. That is the case that happens even today with all of us with Swami. Recollecting the beautiful days when He smiled and brought smiles on our face. Even now as I recollect, tears well up in the eyes. And when we look back, thinking of all the things that we cried for, telling Swami, this is what I want, this is what we want, this is what... And today when we realize in perspective that they are nothing, we smile and laugh at our own foolishness. And that is what happened even to those children when after Swami left the school. It was literally for them like how we are feeling now, you know, of Swami having left the physical. Because we cry because we feel we are no longer able to touch, feel Swami physically with us. And that is what the children there felt. And therefore when the child was called up on stage to lead in the prayer, he would break down, as you said, after every two lines. There is one more beautiful aspect to this prayer, you know, as we said, it was the translation of the national anthem.
Which Tagore.
The beauty of the national anthem of India is that it is not a song that just glorifies the land. It is a prayer to the Lord.
Right.
It is addressed to the Bharata Bhagya Vidata, which means the fulfiller of the destiny of Bharat, which is the Lord.
And you know, it's a beautiful composition because it describes the whole landscape in prayer.
In prayer.
It says from the, from the Himalayas in the north to the Kanyakumari in the south, naming all the main rivers. And he says all these flow in gratitude to you, in reverence and prayer to you. And I'm going to play a small clip here, Arvind, where Swami himself describes how the principal comes and asks Swami to write that poem, and Swami gives the lyrics.
Wow.
I think, you know, 70 years later, Swami is describing that song.
Let's listen to that. Yeah.
Earlier, Bhagavan used to lead all the school in prayer.
The headmaster
of the school, Kameshwara, is an ardent devotee.
He's
a very good devotee. He said, Sachem is not an ordinary boy, he's a very thunder bones.
And Chippi, who was Bilchi, Raju, you Pratan Chiyalana.
He said, Raju, you should offer prayer today. What is to pray? You compose prayer now.
Apunen Chippano.
Bhagavan said,
Aharhatava Afwana Pracharita, Suritava Udaravani, Hindu Bodhisika Jaina Parasika Musulmana Kristani.
He has immediately, instantaneously composed the whole of the prayer song reflecting the unity of all the
religions.
And they said you should not mention the names of all religions. They have got a kind of fanatism to one's own religion.
Kani college school vallandar chaladini mechukunnaru.
But all school children appreciated it.
Then Swami is saying that the opposition he faced when he wrote Hindu, Bhautasika and all the religions.
Yeah, Prem, when Swami spoke about the opposition he faced, I was reminded of, maybe we have narrated it on the satsang, but you know, when we were planning the first Independence Day drama to put up in Swami's presence, that time Swami had his fall and he was not able to stand and walk for long periods. So at the end of our Independence Day drama, we felt that on Independence Day it is natural that we sing the national anthem, Janaganamana. And we were told by the elders that you should not do this, and they had a right reasoning for it. They said, see, Swami is not able to stand now, so it will not be nice for us to make him stand. Because when the national anthem is sung, Swami has always stood. You know, Swami stands up. So they said it is not right. But when we got an opportunity and prayed to Swami, Swami said, yes, you should have the national anthem. And he said, every person who is a human will appreciate this. He said, the whole hall will stand up and sing. You know, because I felt the speciality of this national anthem, as we said before, is that it is a prayer. And therefore it becomes universal. It is just describing the rivers and mountains in India. And it says that all this flows in gratitude to you. That's all. So it's like a prayer to the Lord, praising His bounty and glory. And therefore Swami said, all should sing. You know, irrespective of caste, creed, nationality. And that is what actually happened. And recollecting that day, you know, I feel so much thrill, because it was a beautiful experience. And well, you know, to cut the suspense, on the final day, Swami did not stand up. He sat and he just kept beat with his hand, you know, just like how he does for the bhajans. It was as if he was receiving the prayer. It felt so beautiful. When we sing bhajans, Swami smiles and taps his hand and receives the bhajans. Here was he receiving the national anthem, because it is not just a national anthem, it is a prayer to the Lord.
And you know, as you were saying, it was addressed to him. It just reminded, you know, 1965, I just happened to look through a discourse. That discourse was just after the India-Pakistan War, 1965, just a couple of months later. And there Swami starts talking about the fear which people are having and the apprehensions which are there, because India was still a young country, just about less than two decades into independence. And then Swami ends the discourse by saying that, fear not, nothing can touch this mother of Sanatan Dharma. I give you my word.
Wow.
Here really was the Bhagavad-gita who was saying that.
Now hearing this, Prem, you know, if I am given the choice in the video game in the beginning, I think I'll choose India to be born.
No wonder. I think if we were to follow Swami's life, as you said, you know, study deeply, I think we will know why he made every choice that he made. And maybe with that wisdom, if we are given the choice, we would make every choice the way he made it. So before we go on to the other aspects of the Kamalapuram stay which Swami lived through, maybe we should play that same song, the prayer song which Swami used to sing, in the tune in which Swami had taught it to the children.
Definitely, Prem.
And this is from the Shirdi Sai Bhakti Sai serial, which was
Divya Katha, the teleserial that was made.
Right. And very beautifully rendered indeed.
Thank you.
Well, Prem, talking of the Kamalapuram days, whenever Swami has spoken about the Kamalapuram days or whenever we read about it from Satyam Shyam Sundaram, we always see one particular mention that is almost come to signify or epitomize these Kamalapuram days,
right,
and that is the fair at Pushpagiri.
Right, the cattle fair which used to happen at Pushpagiri. As we spoke about Swami's child school days, the middle school days in Kamalapuram, Swami was very, very popular in the school. He was the class monitor. Swami used to say, I used to be the class monitor.
Mm.
So it was natural that when there was a scouts camp at this Pushpagiri cattle fair, the scout master wanted Swami to follow, Swami to also to join. And Swami would say that, you know, one of the reasons why he wanted Swami to come to the fair is that if he comes, then all the other parents will agree to send their children.
Because one reason is, you know, the scouts, when you go training as scouts, one of the most important things for a scout is discipline.
Right.
And somehow, as children, you know, we are all tuned to be, if we can say, indisciplined. I mean, we don't like discipline. The only reason why the children used to love discipline at that time was because Satyam loved discipline.
Right.
And Satyam was very disciplined. And so this was a way that you could inspire all the children to be part of the scouts. You know, the school would offer scouts who would go and do different kinds of service at the Pushpagiri fair.
Right.
This is something beautiful about the education system in those days that I feel all our education system today must emulate. You know, the students would be sent out as part of their schooling to places to do service. Because that is also a vital part of education.
Right.
That is needed for life. We need to learn how to serve. As we learn mathematics, as we learn English, as we learn our other subjects, we also need to learn how to serve. And this was so natural in the schools of those days, including the British schools that were there before independent India came about, where children would be sent to volunteer and work. How I wish that, you know, it still continues in our institute, in our university. Every year, the Grama Seva has become institutionalized, where the students go and serve in the villages and benefit from the service, learning. It's like an eye-opener for all of them. They learn how to serve. It's an important aspect, face it in life. So that was the reason why the headmaster, scoutmaster wanted Swami Satyam to be part of this scout troop, because then all the children would easily follow and all the parents too would send them, as you said.
Right, but the only problem with this whole scout trip was each boy had to pay a sum of 10 rupees.
Okay.
So that takes care of the travel up and down and the expenditures there.
Hmm.
But as Swami would say, 10 rupees was like a huge sum of money for Swami to afford.
For him.
Really.
Hmm.
Because Swami said when his father left him at Kamalapuram at his brother's house, he gave him 2 anas. He said, you keep this for your expenses. 2 anas.
2 anas, just for the information of our listeners, 16 anas make up a rupee.
1 rupee.
1 rupee. So 2 anas is like 1/8 of a rupee.
And that,
12 paise.
That's how little that was. And here was Swami having to pay 10 rupees.
And speaking of rupees and money, you know, one more reason why they wanted Satyam to be a part of this troop was because there were some wealthy patrons who would often sponsor the troop.
Right.
A part of the expense. So it was felt that only if Satyam is part of the scouts, will the people feel that this scout troop will do some good. Otherwise, they would feel that these scouts are simply taking money to go and enjoy a picnic or an excursion.
Right.
And Prem, even to this day, you know, that holds good. It has been my personal experience. On a few occasions when I have got to visit some places, it is only because, you know, we speak about Swami and cherish His memories and share His love with everyone, that everyone feels that this is a beautiful visit, a beautiful trip that you have made, a wonderful visit that you have made. Otherwise, it is always considered like a picnic or an excursion. It is only Swami who brings meaning into every travel and trip, not only when He was a student, even today in our own lives. Wherever we travel, you know, we have seen that it is only when we spread Swami's message, live Swami's message, and relive Swami's memories, that we also feel that the trip is fruitful, and everyone around also feels that the trip is fruitful. Without Swami, it just becomes a picnic or an excursion or simply frivolous spending of time, energy and money. And that was what even the patrons of those days thought. They thought if Satyam is not there, this troop is up to no good. Only the presence of Satyam will give importance to the troop. Mm-hmm. And that was again the reason why they wanted, so that the sponsors will come ahead and take care of partial expenses of the scout troop, and also realize that this scout troop means business. Because Satyam is part of it, it has to mean business.
And that was something which followed in Swami's projects in the later life also.
Mm.
Because, you know, when Swami started the hospital, when Swami started the university, the water project, there were his devotees who came to help willingly. But there were a lot of philanthropists who thought that if Swami is doing something, you can be sure that he's going to do it in the best manner possible.
Correct.
And that is why so many people came and offered, you know, in the form of wealth, in the form of their efforts. Doctors, there's so many doctors who never were devotees of Swami in the sense of how we understand them. But when they heard about the hospital, they came and offered their services.
Exactly. There were so many who felt that the way Swami would utilize the resources would be much better than the way they would utilize their own resources.
Right.
And therefore they gladly offered it to Swami, be it their skill, their talent, their time, their energy or their money.
And that was precisely what was happening here. As you said, the scoutmaster was very, very particular that somehow he has to convince Swami to go.
And not only the scoutmaster, all of the classmates, all the scouts also, they felt that no trip or no visit or nothing, no activity as such can be complete without their loving Satyam, without their beloved Satyam, who is also their guru. You know, he had become guru. Wherever Swami went, he became guru to his classmates and his peers.
Right.
So they felt that without Satyam, they would be leaderless. They would be like, you know, not only bored, because Satyam regaled them with tales, with mythological stories, with songs and inspirational stories. Without Satyam, it felt so incomplete, it felt so empty. So even the children were very eager that Satyam is part of the scout troop.
Right. And you know, when Swami used to recollect that, Swami used to say, you know, khaki, knickers and shirt, you know what I had those days, Swami used to recollect. Swami said that all I had was one pair of clothes, which I used to wear to school. And Swami would describe how he would come back from school, change into a small towel.
Just drape a towel around him.
And wash his clothes, and then take a copper vessel, put burning embers in that, use that as an iron, press the clothes, and then fold the clothes very neatly and put it under a trunk. So that next morning it will be fresh and, you know, like a new uniform. And Swami would say that with repeated washing the clothes at Tone, and he said, I couldn't even afford safety pins. So I used to take cactus thorns and so that they will hold the torn cloth together.
And Prem, what we discussed before, the same thing. Even, you know, toward after his 70th birthday, 80th birthday, there were thousands of devotees, you know, who would anonymously gift wrap and send robes to Swami, because they felt that was a way they wanted to offer. But Swami always used just a few pairs, the minimal pairs. Rest of the robes, every now and then we have seen, you know, Swami would just distribute it. 5,000 robes distributed to the devotees who will treasure it, cherish it and benefit from it in their own ways. Swami just kept giving. It's not that he couldn't afford. Throughout his life, Swami had just had two of those buttons that he wears for the robes. It's not that he couldn't afford more. But again, his life is his message. What I need is what I will have. Otherwise, no problem. So, it is not as if that he couldn't afford and therefore he had only one pair of clothes. That's all he needed, and therefore even when he could afford all the clothes in the universe, he just stuck to what he just needed, because that is how the Lord lives.
And here also Swami was telling a very beautiful message, where there was a situation, he cannot go to the scout, the tour, because he couldn't afford it. And he cannot tell his teacher and his classmates that I'm not going because I can't afford it. So he had to say something by which he
can... Because if he says that, it'll be like the family...
The honor of the family might be at stake. So Swami had to say something by which he will be left out.
Hmm.
But then the moment he said, you know, Swami would say that I tried telling them that I'm not keeping well.
Hmm.
And immediately the rest of the children in the class said that then we are also not going to the scout.
Hmm.
We don't want to go without Satyam.
Hmm.
So Swami was in this predicament, and then he tried telling the scout master, saying that, you know, my relatives are coming to the Pushpagiri fair. I'll come with them. Maybe I can't join you as a scout. I'll come with them.
In fact, I remember in one discourse, Swami, when he was mentioning about these days, he said that even when I feigned sickness, I did not say fever, because fever is something that you can put your palm on the forehead or the throat and check the temperature. Therefore, I said, I'm having an upset stomach, I'm having diarrhea, I'm having stomach pain, because that is something they could not check. But even then, they were insistent.
Right. So, then Swami says, Swami had two classmates, benchmates, Ramesh and Paresh. We've heard Swami talk about them so many times. And Swami would say that one of these boys, that Ramesh, his father was a very high officer in...
I think some Sirastidar or something.
Sirastidar or something. I don't know what rank that is in
the
modern
government
time.
Of those days.
Right. So, and Swami would say that this Ramesh was exactly of the same stature of Swami.
Same height.
Same height and, you know, same... So whatever clothes he wore could easily fit Swami. So what he said was, he went to his father, who was quite well off, and told him that, you know, these scout dresses, these khaki shorts and shirt, I like them very much. Can you stitch two pairs for me?
Instead of one.
Mm. So the father had no problems and stitches another pair. So what this boy does is he wraps it in a newspaper and keeps it under Swami's desk with a small chit. And he says, Satyam, do you consider me as a younger brother? If so, accept this. Otherwise, I will throw myself under a train.
Oh, okay. Threat also. Suicide threat.
And Swami says that I took that chit and I tore it into pieces and threw it away. And then I wrote another chit saying that, yes, of course, you are my younger brother. But it is not right for objects to come in between friendship. The only thing which has to be exchanged between two friends is love.
Hmm.
So if I accept this article today, then with time this friendship will fall away. Is that what you want?
And Swami also gives a reason for why it happens. He says if friendship is based on exchange of materials, the giver feels higher and the receiver feels lower. And friendship or a relationship can never exist between unequals. It always exists between equals.
Right.
And therefore, I do not want to accept what you are giving.
And Swami wrote this chit and keeps it under Ramesh's desk. And you know, when Swami used to narrate this to all students, Swami used to tell, those days children used to listen to me.
Oh Swami, we will listen to you Swami, we will try our best and try to follow everything that you have said. Please give us the strength. We will be good children like those children of those days and try to follow your teachings. You know, that was one hand, and we were speaking about the Swami feigning sickness. Finally, when he complained of the stomach ache, there was no way they could check. Swami says that one of his teachers said that Satyam is having trouble, he's having pain, so do not trouble him. We will let him be. And we will go to the fair. Conduct whatever service activities we are supposed to do there. The scouts will leave without Satyam. So, in that way, you know, Swami had his way. But then his heart melted. His buttery heart, how it cannot melt. Seeing the way the children pined for him to be a part of their scout troop, even the episode that you just mentioned, Ramesh, forcing him to accept dress. And Ramesh did that because he wanted Swami to be part of the scouts. He wanted Swami to accompany them. So because of all these combined feelings, Swami decided that, okay, I will go to the fair. But now the question came, how? And that was when Swami hit upon the idea of his books.
Right. Swami would say that, you know, I used to maintain all my books so neatly because I hardly read from them. That's what Swami would say. And there were always boys who could not afford new books. So they would buy it from seniors. I think it was a practice which was there even in our school times.
Correct. And, second hand.
Yeah. Just take it from seniors. So Swami offered these books to one boy. And Swami would say that the actual value of that book was about 12 rupees. And Swami told this boy, see, I don't need so much. I need only 5 rupees. Because Swami had decided that all he needed was to buy those scout uniform. And food he would manage. That's what Swami had thought. And Swami thought he would walk to Pushpagiri. from Kamalapuram, which is about 29 kilometers. You know, I actually happened to check it up in
29 kilometers.
Right, in my Google God. Maps. You know, it's Kamalapuram to Pushpagiri is about 29 kilometers, and it's interesting to see Kamalapuram even now. The railway station, which Swami would mention later, we will come to that episode. It's just two platforms, even today. And you can imagine what it would have been in
Prem, as you're narrating, I don't know, have you visited Kamalapuram?
No, I don't think so.
No, right? I feel, you know, sometime we must go to this Kamalapuram, go to the area where the Pushpagiri fair was being held. We have missed photographing it and recording it in the way it was then. But they are historic sites, right? I mean, not only historic, they are legendary sites because God was there. So maybe we should visit sometime, take some pictures and see how it is. We also realize that if after these many years of growth and progress, this is the condition of the towns today, how they might have been in those days.
Right, absolutely. And here was Swami and all kinds of things, even for that uniform, as Swami, as I was narrating that.
Yeah, correct. You were saying that right. He went to the boy and said, don't give me 12 rupees, give me only 5 rupees.
5 rupees. And Swami would say that, you know, those days, like how you have paper money, notes.
Correct.
That was very uncommon then. Most of them used to transact in coins. So this boy gave 5 rupees in all anas.
Anas, dammidis.
Yeah, 16 anas make a rupee. And then 3 dammidis make an anas. I think that's the calculation.
Yes.
So he gave in all that.
Dammidis, anas, right. Bottus. You know, Swami mentioned about 6 names of the currencies the way it was in those days. So there are like 3 dammidis which make up an ana. Then there's a bottu. I don't know what's the equivalent. There's a bottu. Then there are 16 anas that make up a rupee. So the boy paid Swami in these dammidis, bottus and anas. And so Swami ended up with one huge bundle of coins.
Coins, which was just 5 rupees.
Huh.
And Swami said that, you know, that cloth also was a very old one.
In which it was bundled.
So when he gave it to Swami, that moment it just gave way. And all the coins spilt in the house. And hearing that, the clatter of all these coins, Swami says the lady of the house comes and she thinks that Satyam has stolen the money from her trunk.
Otherwise, where would he get so much money from?
And so she goes and slaps Swami and takes away all the money. And here, you know, when this is happening, that boy is standing there with the textbooks. And he's trying to explain that, no, I have given that money to him in exchange for this. But that lady is not ready to accept. She slaps Swami and takes away all the money. So the only option of making to that trip seemed to have just vanished.
There's one more aspect here. I really don't know if, as children, today when we see, it's not an uncommon sight. Children howl and wail and have their way with their parents. Whatever they want, they get it. And parents too, you know, are scared to discipline, if I may say so, because you can be sued if you raise your hand on your own child. In some countries it has come to that, you know. But disciplining the children and teaching forbearance to a child is so important because, you know, Swami gives the example of a sapling. When it's growing, if it gets a crooked bent, maybe you can straighten it with a prop, a support, tying some thread, right, so that it grows up straight. But once it gets crooked and grows up, once it becomes a tree, there is no way you can straighten the bend. If you try it with all your force, you will end up in only breaking the tree. And that is very symbolic of how important childhood is and how important it is to impart values and forbearance and all these goodness in the children. And for that, the parents themselves must have it. And so, you can see Swami here, you know, just imagine if a child is, when a child is, if we can say, punished for a mistake that is done itself, the child protests so much nowadays. For no fault of his, he was being slapped and thrashed. Swami just stood silent, bearing it all and not talking back to elders. What an ideal. I mean, I feel that even if we take Swami as a human being, forget God, all this is really possible. If you do all this, what he has done, you will become a God yourself.
And you know, come to think of it, when we face obstacles in what we try to do, we pray to Swami. And here, Swami was facing so many obstacles in that small trip which he wanted to make. And you know, every time Swami faced it with so much fortitude, and as you said, every moment was a lesson, because Swami might have even thought that here is a younger boy in front of me, and I cannot misbehave with my elders in front of him.
It'll set a wrong example.
I mean, Swami would have thought of so many things when he did each of these things. But as you said, you know, his heart had melted. He wanted to go to the Pushpagiri fair with his friends. So, as he had already decided, he said, okay, anyway, I'm going to...
Correct. Because he had lost the money. So, he just decided, no problem. Let's see what happens. I'm going to walk to the fair. Right. And so, immediately after this episode, he just walked out and began to walk towards the fair, which, you know, you said it's 29 kilometers. I had no idea. I was thinking it's about something like 5 or 6 kilometers. So 29 kilometers. And Swami narrated during his discourse that when he was walking towards the fair, he became very tired and very thirsty.
Thing, I'd like to mention this, Yarvin. You know, out of curiosity, I just wanted to see how far it is. The Kamalapuram town to Pushpagiri town. In Google Maps, you know, when you select the, you know, get directions.
Correct.
You can choose between either a bus journey or by walk or by vehicle. So I gave by foot.
Okay.
You know what comes up? There's a message which comes up. It shows you the route and it says, beware that there might not be any footpaths in this journey.
Okay.
There might not be any pedestrian paths for you to take. Which means the road is so rugged even now that you might not find a good place to walk. And Swami says that he walked that early in the morning. He started very early so that he would reach Pushpagiri in time.
My God, you will have to walk the whole day to cover 29 kilometers. And when Swami grew so fatigued and tired, he did not even have, you know, water to drink because there's nothing. He was just walking and very few would, you know, very few, almost nobody would undertake this crazy venture of walking all the distance. So Swami said that he shared the water which the buffaloes drank from the water trough.
Right.
He drank that water because he was thirsty and he satisfied himself with that. You know, Prem, just imagine the Lord of the universe. He could have commanded the celestial waters of the Ganges with mere will. He just had to will, but no. He drank that water which the cattle are drinking because he wanted to show the way one has to lead one's life. An ideal way of life. And he, you know, his life is testimony to the fact that if you stick to values and lead an ideal life, the whole world will worship you. That's what is happening, right?
And you know, it's really funny. Just yesterday we were talking about how we all gravitated to this packaged drinking water culture. You know, I think 10 years back, we all knew that we had to just, you know, catch some water which comes in the tap and maybe boil it or filter it and have. But now it's so scary. People,
it's an obsession.
Yeah, you just cannot drink water which is not from a packaged bottle. And, you know, we've lost ourselves in such things.
No, I also feel, I don't know, I may be scientifically how wrong, right, but I feel that so many occasions when I've drunk from the tap, nothing has happened to me. Because I feel in one way, you know, this I know is scientific, that when you're exposed to some of these germs and whatever, your immune system builds on actually.
Right.
What we are doing by pampering with, you know, ultra clean water, ultra clean food and only this is, the immune system is so weak because it is inexperienced. It has no experience in combat. The first instance of infection, you go down completely. And this is what is happening, you know. The children are protected, you know, they're not allowed to play in the sand. You just Google and see, there are thousands of articles on whether children should be allowed to play in the sand. Children have been playing in the sand for centuries, for thousands of years. Yes, there have been cases of one or two infections, but that is just a minority. In fact, there are scientific research papers which show that playing in the sand is itself very beneficial for the child's immune system. But all that is forgotten. The child is made to grow in a kind of isolation, kept away from all this, and therefore, at the slightest loss of precaution, the child gets very sick. And you know what that results in? That doesn't result in the parents or the caregivers realizing that we have done something wrong. They just feel that, oh my God, next time I should be even more strict. It becomes like a vicious cycle, and apparently the immune systems are going down.
Of course, we're not suggesting that we start drinking water from buffalo troughs.
Yes, but...
But as you said, you know, one who had the command, when Swami said, the five elements draw their sustenance from me. And here was Swami saying that I didn't have water to drink, I didn't have food to eat, I didn't have money to buy myself breakfast. And you know, Swami explains that, you know, once he reaches that Pushpagiri fair, till that breakfast time passed, he made sure that he didn't meet any of his friends or teachers. Because he knew that he had not paid for the trip. So his food was not being sponsored by the school.
And it is not right to eat there.
And he's not right to eat. But the moment the teacher or his classmates see him, they might take him for the food. So he wanted to avoid that. At the same time, he wanted to avoid them knowing that he had not eaten.
And there he needed his divine powers, Prem. He needed his divine powers to escape from their watchful eyes. And, you know, this is the unbelievable part of it, you know, Prem. If we have divine powers, I think we will use it in a way that will help us so much. But apparently Swami used his divine powers, which actually did not help him in any way. See, if he had just not used his powers and just presented himself before his classmates and teachers, as you said, surely their heart would have melted and they would have given him food. But it was not right. And therefore, you know what he did? He made the most beautiful aromas emanate from his hand. And when the teachers asked whether he had eaten, the same technique that he had done years ago to his parents, he did it to the teachers as well. He would show them the hand and say that, see, I had my food, so I don't need. I mean, it was like using divine powers against yourself, right? Because once they smell it, they feel, okay, maybe you have had food, and so they'll stop making the offer for food also.
In fact, I know Kasturi sir writes that even much later, Swami used to do the same thing.
Huh.
Because after the Prashandilyam ashram came, Swami used to visit the homes of so many of these residents, the East Prashanti, when Kasturi used to stay there. Swami would just walk in at lunchtime. And Swami had to avoid eating lunch in every place. So invariably Swami would show his hand and say, smell, I've just had lunch and come.
Childhood habits don't die at all.
As you said, when if there's a twist, when the sapling is growing.
Well, in Swami scale, we can't call it a twist. But it shows that, you know, childhood habits stay throughout your life. And therefore, we should use this opportunity, you know, to inculcate in the children values from childhood itself.
And I think that's what Swami lived through his childhood. You know, there is something to learn for everybody. For parents, there is something to learn. For teachers, there are things to learn. For friends, there are things to learn. And Swami has, in his life, demonstrated everything, you know, like how they say Rama is one who has showed with his life how to be an ideal brother, how to be an ideal son, how to be an ideal ruler. I think Swami has given us, for modern times, all that you need. How to be an ideal primary school student, how to be an ideal middle school student. I think skipping the college days, Swami didn't show us how to be an ideal college student by himself, but I think that's what he did for the rest of his life.
Correct.
When he started his university.
And I think, you know, one way also, Swami said that education is stuffing things into the children. We don't need, because the children have everything, goodness, everything is latent within. You have to bring out from within what is there, and therefore educare is important. And I think that is why in his life also, you know, Swami gave up education. Because beyond a certain point, you don't need that kind of education. What you need is to bring out what is latent within you. If we see today, everybody is obsessed in making the child an IT professional, or an engineer, or a doctor. Arts, fine arts, music, none of these are appreciated at all. But these two, if they are latent within an individual, that is what the individual has to do. I mean, so I think that is one reason why he threw away university education. But well, one important point that we forgot to mention in the story, one very poignant point, was when Swami, you know, he took some rest after drinking water from that buffalo trough, he found something interesting. He found an ana coin, one ana coin,
right,
along with a packet of BDs. For those who are unaware, BD is an
country cigarette, sir.
Countryside cigarette, yeah.
Right.
It is just made by rolling tobacco into tobacco leaves.
Right.
And they smoke that. So Swami says that he immediately took that BD packet, took out the BDs, and broke them into bits and buried them in the sand, soil. Now that, you know, shows the kind of, if we can say, hatred that Swami has towards smoking. And you know, though it didn't happen in the childhood, but against alcoholism.
Right.
Because these, he hates them because these ruin families and ruin lives. Human life, which is so valuable, is just frittered away because of these terrible habits. So he buried the BDs, and then, you know, so sweet, Swami says, in his discourse, he said, I committed one mistake in my life. You know, so sweet when Swami says that. He said that he took that one anna coin and he saw a person. He had a stick, you know, not a stick, I mean. That person was conducting some kind of a village casino.
Village casino, right.
Village casino where the game was called Buddha Buddha Kate. I hope I got the pronunciation right.
Okay.
Buddha Kate. Buddha Buddha Kate. Where he would turn a spinning stick.
Mm-hmm.
And if the stick lands on a particular number that you have chosen,
you bet it on.
Yeah, if it's showing 2 there, he gives you 2 times the money. If it's showing 4 there, 4 times the money. And if it lands on any other place, he takes away the money.
Right.
And Swami says that in order to fulfill the needs, he put that one anna coin that he had found there and he multiplied it into 12 annas.
Right.
And Swami says that he could have gone on to win much more. But he just felt sorry for the person because there was no way Swami will lose. So just again, once again, just what he needed.
Exactly.
And you know, in the discourse when Swami narrated this episode, he said, that is one mistake I made in life.
And that's not once, you know, so many times Swami has mentioned that.
Uh-huh.
Whenever he would come to this episode, Swami said, that's the only mistake I've done in my life. I gambled. And that also, you know, like how you said, when Swami tore up that BDs, his dislike for the habit of smoking. Here was his, you know, distaste for the habit of gambling.
Exactly. And once again, the same reason. Because it has ruined so many families. See the humility, Prem. See the humility of the avatar. Okay. We make millions of mistakes and yet we strut about like a proud peacock. And this, if we see in perspective of his life, it is hardly it's not even a blip. And yet, you know, he doesn't spare himself. He brings it out again and again saying, this is a mistake I made. This is a mistake I made. Really, hats off to divine humility. You know, this kind of inspiration. Now we can understand why all the children wanted Satyam. Because this kind of inspiration is very hard to find. Just like all the students loved to be with Swami. All the students then too loved to be with Swami. And just like Swami taught so many values in various ways, he used to teach them too in various ways. And once again, he came up with one composition, you know, which exhorted the children to always stick to the path of Satya and Dharma.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is the way to lead life. And maybe we can take a break now and present that beautiful composition of Swami, which inspires everyone to lead life following the principles of Satya and Dharma.
Right, and this must have been composed in 1930s, I think.
Yeah.
But what we're going to play for you, dear listeners, is the same song which was sung so many years later, maybe in 1990s, 60 years later, by Swami's students. The song which Swami composed for his classmates. Here were his university students singing for him.
Moksham bhavan jane satya dharma.
thought, Prem, that I don't know if Swami would have thought that one day the compositions that he is making would be sung before him, backed by bass guitars and keyboards and drums. Oh my God.
Right. Being blasted on both speakers. And you know, very beautiful song. And I remember, I think it must have been in my first year undergraduate or second year undergraduate.
When early 2000.
When all these songs started resurfacing.
Mm-hmm.
When boys used to sing in front of Swami during Guru Purnima and festivals such as that, they started bringing back these old melodies which Swami had composed. In the 1940s, actually, Swami had taught these to some of the early devotees.
Hmm.
So when these were sung, Swami was so thrilled, you know,
hmm.
because to say the least, some of these songs are real tongue twisters,
hmm.
even for people who knew Telugu.
Correct.
And can't imagine Swami had written all these when he was 14 years old and 12 years old.
Hmm.
And you know, with so much difficulty, I remember we used to learn, and some of these boys from North India who used to be able to sing this song without seeing the scripts.
Hmm.
Because that time that used to be that, you know, if you have scripts in your hand, you can't see Swami.
Correct, because you'll be reading the script,
right.
You can't concentrate.
So we used to try to, as much as possible, memorize these songs.
Hmm.
And Swami used to be so happy. And the best part was, if you make a mistake, Swami will know that, hey, I did not compose it that way. And so many songs, Swami would stop midway and say, no, I didn't write it that way.
Okay.
Change it like this.
Beautiful memories.
Beautiful memories.
Well, Prem, we were speaking about how, you know, Swami won those 12 anas.
Right.
But, you know, his fate was not to be.
Right. Swami would describe, you know, that one ana, three bottus make one ana.
Mm.
And Swami would say that for one bottu, you get three dosas.
Correct.
So Swami said, okay, with one bottu, I can manage my breakfast. With another bottu, I can manage
dinner. Twice a day if I eat,
right.
Three dosas.
So Swami reached Pushpagiri Fair and he started involving himself in the And Swami said that I think Swami takes rest for a while. That's what I think he describes.
Just before reaching the Pushpagiri
just
fair.
Just before reaching the Pushpagiri fair, he rests under a tree.
You know, Swami says that, I'm sorry, I got it a little wrong. This winning of the 12 anas, you know, takes place at the fair itself. Because at the fair itself, there is this gambling game that has been set up there. Swami says at the night, he had no place to sleep because he is not officially with the scouts.
Right.
So he used to, as you said, he had said that my relatives have come, I am staying with them. But Swami had no place to stay. And so Swami was worried about what would happen to this because he had no pockets, nothing, where to keep the money. So Swami said that he would dig a pit in the ground, put the coins, put the pouch of coins inside, close up that pit, make a small mound of sand and sleep on it. And sleep on, using that mound of sand as his pillow and the earth as his bed, the sky as his bed sheet or sheet. That is how Swami used to sleep. And Swami said that one night he was so tired, he slept this way. When he woke up in the morning, he saw that his head was not on that mound of sand. It had been placed elsewhere. That mound of sand had been dug up and those coins were all gone. And so, with 2 days left for the fair to conclude, Swami had no money with him. And he did not borrow, he did not ask. For 2 days, Swami went without food. He starved.
And needless to say, he would have been the most active scout at the Pushpagiri fair too. Because, you know, again that problem of not letting anybody know that you are going through this predicament, lest it brings down your family honor.
How Swami, you know, it's just lost in admiration. How he stuck to family honor in such dire circumstances. If I place myself, you know, I feel I would have just gone about telling everybody, telling, I need help, come on, help me.
I think because we all like sympathy, you know, all said and done. We all are, you know, in some way or the other strive on sympathy. When people feel that, feel sorry for you, feel that, you know, you've been through tough this one. But Swami was here, it was not about himself. He said, I should not portray my family in bad light. This was something which is very striking. As you said, when Swami used to narrate this in discourses, this was really, you know, these were all lessons for us. Because when we were children, when we were teenagers, I think it's so easy for us to crib about what we don't have.
Correct.
But Swami was telling all of our students, and most of these discourses Swami used to keep repeatedly addressing students. Swami would say, see, family honor is so important. I did not want to let them down. I did not want them. And a family which was not really treating him so well too. And I think the other interesting thing which happens is, as the fair comes to an end, he feels that he has to buy something back home.
That is the tradition, you know, that when you attend Pushpagiri also, and then the fair was held there because there was a temple there.
Right.
And in honor of the goddess and god there, that was why the fair also used to be held. So whenever you visit a place, a holy place, a pilgrimage place, you return home with prasadam. And so Swami wanted to take home some fruits and flowers and some prasadam from Pushpagiri.
Right.
And for that he needed money. That was the time when Swami borrowed. He borrowed from a friend. See, even when Swami borrowed, he borrowed it only for others' sake, never for his sake. Swami says that he borrowed, and with that he bought some kumkum, some fruits, some sweets, and some flowers as prasadam, and then walked all the way back home. You know, a person who could borrow for this could have easily borrowed and had his food, right?
He could have borrowed a few anas more and taken a bus back.
Correct. But he did not do that. He walked all the way back, because even when he was borrowing, it was for others' sake. And, well, the reception he received at home was not pleasant.
Absolutely, because here was Satyam who had vanished from home for 3 days. And I think also Swami says that his sister-in-law was carrying that time. That was one of the reasons why he wanted to make sure that he takes some prasadam back home. And you know, Swami describes that scene in one discourse. When he enters the house, it seems Seshamaraju is back. His elder brother is at home. He's come back during his reprieve from the training. And he's drawing lines in a book with a ruler.
Okay, metal ruler
when Swami enters the house. And already I think his ears have been filled with the fact that Satyam is vanishing, is not at home. Nobody has done the works at, you know, the bringing of water and all those things.
We are all suffering. He has just ditched us and walked away.
The moment Swami steps inside the house, the sister-in-law starts shouting at him for having gone without telling any of them. And the elder brother also is infuriated with the thing. And the next thing he does is he takes the ruler and starts beating Swami in his hand.
His hand swells up.
The whole forearm swells up. That's what Swami says.
Again, Swami is silent.
And Swami doesn't say anything. Swami explains how he goes away and he takes a cloth and puts it in hot water and he himself ties a bandage around his forearm. And I think that after that, for some reason, the father of Swami...
Yes, Peddavenkamma Raju happens to come to Kamalapuram.
Yeah, actually, I think one of the reasons is Seshamma Raju loses one of his children. I think the one which his wife was carrying.
Yes.
There's a miscarriage.
Correct.
And the news is sent to Ishwaramma and Peddavenkamma Raju, and Peddavenkamma Raju comes immediately. And in fact, you know, Swami describes how Seshamma Raju sends a telegram. And those days, there was no way a telegram will reach Puttaparthi.
Hmm.
It can go only as far as Bukapatnam.
Because there's no, it's not on the postal map of India.
So when there are a few telegrams, they might dispatch a fellow to go and tell in Puttaparthi that the telegram. So it kind of beats the idea of a telegram completely. But it seems on that day, Peddavenkamma Raju was at Bukapatnam making purchases for his small shop which he had. So the moment he sees the telegram, he boards a bus and comes to Kamalapuram. And you know, when he comes, here he sees Swami with a bandaged arm.
Mm-hmm.
And he's so pained and he asks Swami, what happened? What happened? Why are you? You know, what is this injury about? And again Swami says, no, nothing, I just fell down.
Exactly. And the father realizes that you cannot get such an injury by just falling down. He also comes to know of what might have happened. And so he tells Satyam that, you know, Satyam, you leave this and come back. I don't want, you know, that is when Swami says that his father told him that we can even sell salt, make some money and eke a livelihood if we want. You need not study if this is going to result. Father had great love for the son. He had such great love. He said, you just come back with me, Satyam. I will sell salt and we will do something. But no need for you to go through this.
In fact, Swami says that there was one Subbamma who was living beside Seshamma Raju's house.
Mm.
She was the one who used to make, you know, she used to have a small makeshift restaurant or whatever. She used to make dosas and give. She happens to tell Swami's father about what Swami is going through in this house.
What transpired there, huh?
He says, aren't you well off enough even to take care of this small boy? Do you know how much he suffers? And he carries all this water. And that is when the father comes and, you know, he sees all the wounds. He sees the scar on his shoulder, which has come because of carrying this water. And, you know, Swami says that one day in the evening after it's dark, Venkamma Raju calls Satyam and says that, you know, come with me. So they take a lantern and go out into the fields. And the father catches Swami's hands and he says, why are you suffering like this?
Mm.
You know, why are you not telling us what you have, what is going through, what is happening here?
Mm.
And he requests him, you come back with me.
Mm.
And as you said, he says that, you know, whatever, we'll do whatever we can. And
we can sell salt,
We can sell salt and we can take care of you.
Mm.
But
Swami refuses.
Right.
He says, Father, it is not right. Just now, sister-in-law has lost a child. She will be in trauma. She will need support. So, I will listen to you. I will not disobey you. I will return to Puttaparthi. I will come back. But not immediately. Give it some time. You go back now, Father. I will be fine. You don't worry. He reassures his father and says that when the time comes, I will return. I will come. I will come back to Puttaparthi. You know, even as I said that statement and in relation to the Aradhana Divas, I just thought, what a beautiful statement, right? You go, wait. When the time comes, I will return to Puttaparthi. Waiting for the day when... memories. Anyway, Prem, I think the time now in the clock is showing 1:59. We have got still a few more episodes of the Kamalapuram days. We will take it up in the next satsang.
Even as we are going through these episodes, especially where Swami's classmate comes and offers him that uniform, recollecting that, Swami says, you know, why did he offer that to me?
Mm.
It is not just like that. Swami says that all the Purvajanma good deeds which he had done
in his past birth,
that was what gave him that good thought of offering this to Swami.
Mm.
That was the culmination of so many good that he had done.
Mm.
And you know, I remember one of my juniors, when Swami had gone to Kodaikanal, as we have, I think, spoken about it before, Swami would give money to all the boys and ask them to go for shopping.
Correct.
That used to be one of the sessions.
Mm.
And the session that follows is, all these boys would come back and show Swami what they've bought.
Mm.
So one of these boys had bought a shawl for Swami, which was exactly the same color of Swami's ochre robe.
Okay.
Okay, so he bought two shawls. One was for his mother and the other was for Swami. So when this boy went up to Swami, he showed the two things. He said, Swami, this is for my mother and this is for my Sai mother, Sai Ma. Okay, and he put it on Swami's lap. Perfect match with the color of Swami's. But Swami didn't want it. Swami said, give this also to your mother. And Swami gave it to him. Swami said, don't cover me with this shawl. Cover me with your heart. That is all I want. And you know, he was disappointed nonetheless and he went away. But Swami wanted to acknowledge that this boy had done something. When Swami gives something, some money and says, you buy whatever you want. This boy brought something for Swami. So Swami wanted to acknowledge this. And so beautifully Swami did it. One day Swami had called a devotee for an interview. Okay, and when this person came back, this devotee went and sat next to the father of this boy.
Okay.
Okay. And he was literally in tears. And he said, sir, what do I tell you? How much love Swami's students have for him? And how much love Swami has for his students? So this student's father was little interested and he said, why, what did Swami say? You know, and Swami had actually described to him this whole scene of how Swami sent boys for shopping and this boy brought a shawl for Swami. You're a Swami who had not accepted the shawl, but he was acknowledging what a beautiful act it was. And I think that is our Swami, and
the feeling behind the act counts more than the act itself.
Right. So,
Prem, do we have the night prayer in our playlist?
I really hope that we can play it at least the next week.
Okay.
And a few more tracks from the latest releases that we mentioned. So, dear listeners, this is not still the end of Kamalapuram. We will be, there are some very, very beautiful incidents and very, very important ones about Kamalapuram, which Swami has spoken in his discourses, which we will speak about in the, maybe the week that follows. The next week,
next fortnight.
Right. So that way we'll continue the Satyam Shivam Sundaram Satsang. We offer this effort of ours at Swami's lotus feet. And I think it's not enough how many times we thank him for giving us this opportunity to recollect these beautiful stories. And as we all said, Aradhana Mahotsav has just got over. And the best way we can actually offer our Aradhana to Swami is to keep him in our minds.
Aradhana itself means remembrance.
Right.
So, we actually, Swami does not benefit by us remembering him. We benefit a lot. Our lives get uplifted. It gets fulfilled. It feels so sanctified. So, let every day of our lives be an Aradhana Mahotsavam, where we spend our time and energy thinking about him, reliving his life, and drawing inspiration from that so that our lives become his message.
That, dear listeners, is the end of this week's satsang. Brother Chandu, who runs the Love to Love segment, is not with us. He's left a file that I'll be playing for you. And as the segment Love to Love comes to an end, you'll be joined by Brother Ganesh of the Telugu team, who is again bringing you an interesting conversation with one of the doctors of the General Hospital. Thank you, listeners, for your company. Do stay tuned to Radio Sai Global Harmony. Happy listening.